Greetings, explorers of Timeship Earth. Welcome to Allaware, the show designed to help you get a handle on your hologram, the program voted by dolphins number one in the podcast category. It's time once again for your weekly deep sea dive into multidimensionality. This week, we explore one of the most bewitching subjects of all, time travel and time shifts, with my guest Starfire Tor, respected Psi researcher who not only claims that coexisting timelines are real, but is teaching others through her website and interdimension list at Yahoo Groups specific protocols to gain precognitive information from different dimensional realms and to create reality shift manifestations in this timeline, among many other things that we'll be getting into later in the program. Thanks for joining me. I'm Liz Miller, and I'll be your host, and I'm pretty sure that I'm the same version of Liz that spoke to you last week, but after my conversation with Starfire, I'm not quite so sure. Let me explain. During the conversation, which you are about to hear, Starfire mentions that timeline anomalies happen to her and the people around her all the time. So I couldn't help but wonder whether anything like that might happen to me. I've had many spine-tingling déjà vus and strange glitches in time occur in my life to know that I would probably notice it straight away if it happened. Well, I didn't have to wait for long. Starfire and I recorded this interview just a couple of days ago, and while the recording was being made, I was very aware of the fact that I probably just had enough free disk space to fit the recording onto my hard drive, and although my trusty computer has served me well, it's pretty old and it can be a bit unstable if it's been running too long. At the time, I only remembered that it had been on for more than 24 hours once I'd already begun the recording, so I just crossed my fingers and hoped that it would all be okay. Starfire and I ended up being on the phone for a lot longer than I'd anticipated because of our conversation. It was just so enthralling, but as soon as I put the phone down, I hit stop on the recorder software I was using, and to my utter horror, the screen froze and the computer crashed. As you can imagine, my heart sank. I stared at the screen in complete disbelief, knowing that I hadn't saved the file, and once I restarted the computer, I wouldn't be able to recover it. All that work and effort gone. I wondered how we could possibly recreate the kind of magic we had captured during our conversation a second time. How would I find the time to re-record the interview and still get the show done on time? And worst of all, how could I ring Starfire and tell her the news? And to add to the complications, I had to get back on the phone straight away, as I'd booked myself a phone session with a healer that works with the Pleiadians. So I was really looking forward to that, and it was meant to be starting then, so I couldn't even call Starfire back to tell her the news. So I decided to remain calm, even though I thought I had a pretty sizable disaster on my hands, and decided to leave the computer alone until I could speak to an expert and get a second opinion. And even though previous experience had taught me that the file wasn't going to be saved, I called a friend who's an IT expert for advice, and when I told him what had happened and asked, naively, "Do you think there's any way I can recover the file?" my friend just sort of snorted and made a few sucking sounds in the air like, and said, "I really don't think so. I'd say you've probably got about a 1% chance, even if you take out the hard drive." And that only made my heart sink further. So I just sat there for a moment and thought about my options. And now here's a real-life example of how Otherware works, and how this information that you hear on this program can empower you to choose what kind of world you inhabit. I could have chosen to let myself stay in that mind frame and become overwhelmed with feelings of frustration, sadness, and hopelessness. And I could have kept telling myself lies, like I am so stupid and this is a disaster. But as I heard myself saying those things in my head, I decided to stop right there and take a moment to choose how I wanted to react. And in that moment, all my training kicked in and I told myself there was a better way to handle the situation and that this didn't have to be a disaster. I could create a reality in which I restarted the computer and I'd find a file, a temporary file that would appear magically in one of my folders and it would contain the recording I had just made. All I had to do was change my frame of mind and start broadcasting a different frequency than the one I was. Otherwise, I knew I really didn't have any hope of recovering that file. My mind was flooded with images and ideas raced around my brain. Scenes from the recent documentary The Secret, where you see people emitting powerful waves of thought and feeling that look like vibrating concentric bands of energy that ripple out from them into the quantum field, like transmissions from a radio antenna. And I thought about what I was broadcasting. It was all chaos and really negative vibes. How did I feel? Awful. And I knew that that had to change. And then I thought about Greg Braden's rediscovery of a lost mode of prayer that I could use that could change that broadcast. And then I remembered my conversation with Starfire and realized that I could also use one of her techniques, which is called copy and paste, where you tune into a coexisting timeline where the desired outcome you want exists, and you copy it from that timeline and paste it into this one. So I closed my eyes and got quiet and asked for my guides and evolutionary support team to assist. I even asked for Starfire's higher self to come and assist if possible, and for any roaming Time Lords to lend a hand. I thought, what harm could that do? And as I was facing the window, I immediately noticed, through my closed eyelids, that this beautiful, warm, mid-afternoon sun was coming in through the blinds, which were partially closed, and a stream of light rays were just falling onto my face, around my eyes and forehead. And it was just gorgeous. For a minute, I forgot about everything else, and I just let that sunlight warm my skin, and I breathed in the life force that it carried, which was something I thought about doing because of the recent interview with Jasmine. And it's just started to get warm here in Melbourne again after a cold winter, so it just felt beautiful. Then I remembered Jasmine's prana exercise that she gave us a couple of weeks ago, and so over the next couple of minutes, I just took some long, slow breaths, and I breathed in the sun's rays, and I visualized a pink cosmic cable that was emanating from the heart of the universe, carrying divine love through all dimensions, that was coming in through the sun to our solar system, and I saw it connecting to my heart. Then I breathed in, and I called forth all versions of my body, aura, and hologram from all dimensions and said, I am. And as I breathed out, I said, love, and let it fill my being. And that's when I relaxed, and I knew that I'd begun to change my reality. And the very fact that we are going to hear this interview at all could quite possibly be the result of how I used these techniques to activate a sequence of events that manifested instantly into this timeline to make that a reality. So let me finish the story. The lost mode of prayer that Greg Braden writes about describes our ability to pray in a way that involves generating genuine feelings of joy and gratitude in our bodies as we pray and meditate on an outcome we desire. You feel it, as if the outcome were here now. It's one of the most powerful techniques I know. So I shelved all of my thoughts of doubt, put them to the side, and began by feeling deep appreciation, the kind that I would feel if the file wasn't lost. And at the time, it was a really huge deal. So you've got to try and imagine what my state of mind was like at the time. And in my mind, I saw images of myself restarting the computer and opening the file and going along as if this setback hadn't happened. Then I remembered the copy and paste technique. So I saw myself with Starfire and told her that I really needed her help. And after that, she literally became a blur. It was like watching a movie. on fast forward. So I did what I could and scanned until I thought I found the timeline where I could see myself starting up the computer, and my miracle file was there. Then I did something else. I fast forwarded to the time when I would be telling you this story on the show and how this interview was manifested from a coexisting timeline. And then I saw all of us together clinking champagne glasses as we celebrated this wonderful turn of events. And okay, I know that the champagne scene was probably a bit much, but hey, it worked for me. By this stage, I was in so much gratitude and I felt so good because I was totally in the zone, living the experience as if it were happening in that moment. It only lasted a few minutes, but I knew that I'd given it my all. I was completely committed to it, so now all I had to do was push the little black button on my computer to reboot, and we would all soon see the results. A little doubt came in at that point, as you can imagine, but I just refused to buy into it and took a deep breath. The screen came back to life soon after that, and I calmly went to the folder where my audio files are usually saved. I opened it, remained calm, and tried to remain neutral about the outcome, whatever it was going to be. And to my sheer astonishment and delight, there it was. A new, quite strange-looking temporary file with a name I knew was from the software I had used, and it looked like it just might be it. I screamed with excitement, and once I checked to make sure that it was the right file, I spent the next couple of minutes, and I'm not ashamed to say this, running around here in circles like a World Cup scoring soccer player, flying around the soccer field afterwards in complete ecstasy. I was in complete ecstasy. It was the really, really mad kind. And as I ran around, I was also exclaiming, "Thank you," very loudly into the air, wishing for that moment I could hug my team and jump all over them while I messed up their hair. But instead, I turned to my computer and gave it an extended round of applause and said, "Bravo." In that moment, I actually think I fell in love with it. But that's because I was in love with everything. And that, my friends, is Alaware in action and a pretty good story to show you why I do this show. And really, who else would believe me? We can choose the reality we want to create. We are built to do it. Let's find out how. If you've never heard this show before, Alaware is anything that activates, enhances, or evolves the inner technologies of the multidimensional human. When Alaware returns, respected Psi researcher, scholar, and experiencer, Starfire Tor, joins us on the line from Los Angeles to share with us her stunning discoveries of coexisting timelines, timeline anomalies, her work as the developer of applied reality shift science, including reality shift manifestation, which I think you just heard about then, and we'll find out how all of this ties in to the core matrix of our reality. But first, let's make sure we all know why we're here with some music. Here's a little something that I'm dedicating to all you explorers on Timeship Earth.
Hey, come on, take a ride, there's a party over there, there ain't no job. It's live, it's all the way live, don't even have to walk, don't even have to drive. It's slide, slippity slide, just forget about the troubles in your 9-to-5, and just sail on, that's what you do, just sail on. Now the dude's so fucking, hey, what do you think? What is it called? It's called a lakeside stank.
Give it a hand, put it on the play it for you. You see,
Fantastic Voyage from an album of the same name by Lakeside, released in 1980 on Right Stuff Records. If you would like to find out more about Otherwear, please consider joining the Otherwear Network at Yahoo Groups on the net, and you can find a link to that by checking out the bbsradio.com homepage right now, or if we're not at broadcast time, just click on the link to Otherwear. And you can always find out more about me or the guests that I'm having on the show by reading my blog at otherwear.blogspot.com. Now let's get back to the show. Online. Starfire Tor is a respected Psi researcher, scholar and experiencer who is the discoverer of time shifts, the core matrix, and is the developer of applied reality shift science, including reality shift manifestation and reality shift healing. She is also dedicated to proactively applying her knowledge towards creating a better world. Starfire Tor is well known for her documented ability to see future events using her out-of-body experiences and Psi data download techniques, and whenever possible she uses her abilities to help those in need. In an effort to connect with others who can Psi see future events, thereby utilizing the combined input to help others, Starfire Tor created the Interdimension ID list at Yahoo Groups, and you can also find her on the internet at starfiretor.com. It's my great pleasure to welcome her to the show. Starfire Tor, it's wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you for being here on Otherwear.
You're so welcome.
Thank you. So I can't wait to get into all of these incredible subjects that we're going to be talking about, but the first thing I would like to mention right off the bat is that time travel does exist. It is a reality, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You have had some amazing experiences with time travel, and not just that, with timeline anomalies. Would you explain what a timeline anomaly is and what the terminologies are that you've created around this?
Right. These are phrases that I coined based on my research into time shifts, and basically a timeline anomaly or a dual timeline conflict is where you have knowledge of or experience something and you know that it exists in your reality, such as you travel down the same road every day, many times a day, you know what the street looks like, you know about the buildings and the people and the colors and the trees, and then one day you travel down that same road and there's a building there that was never there before. It wasn't there the day before. It is absolutely physically impossible for that structure to have been built there, and yet there it is. What do you do with that information? This is why it's a dual timeline conflict. You have a memory of the street without the building. You have a memory of the street with the building. Only one of these memories can be correct. Correct? No. These are coexisting timelines. These are two different yet similar timelines. I've heard people use the phrase bleeding into one into the other, but actually there's been an editing process that has happened. And something in that person's brain has allowed them to retain the memory of both of these coexisting timelines, one with the house and the other without. So that's what a timeline anomaly brings. In the world of quantum mechanics, it would seem to be impossible based on most quantum mechanical theories, but in truth, if a quantum mechanical theory does not involve psi and coexisting timelines, that quantum mechanical theory is missing the boat. So I'm sure that many of your listeners have experienced some sort of timeline anomaly in their life, even possibly something like a deja vu. If they remember having a conversation with someone, they swear that they remember that conversation, but that other person really has no memory of that conversation. Both these people are telling the truth. Both these people have good memories, yet they're both right. How? It's a timeline anomaly. It's a dual timeline memory conflict. That's how it works, Liz.
Well, let's talk about these timelines that run parallel to each other, I guess you could say, where one may be edited and one may be not.
Well, first, I just want to say that the term of parallel timelines has been around for a very, very long time. But with my time shift research, I've sort of revised that thinking. I prefer to call it coexisting timelines because I don't think of them as running parallel, like a line would run parallel or a street would run parallel. In very many ways, it exists, coexists, in the same time and space. However, each coexisting timeline has its own frequency. Like a radio. If you listen to the radio, you would have a different frequency for a different station. They're all existing and broadcasting in the same space, only separated by frequency. And if you can tune into that frequency, you can listen to the radio station. And that's very much the way that coexisting timelines work. They are frequencies. And how our brain tunes into them determines which coexisting timeline is dominant in our consciousness and awareness. How's that?
Oh, I think that is absolutely correct, that our brains are integral to perceiving different timelines.
Correct.
And that there's actually much more in that's working beside our brain in terms of our multidimensional anatomy that we are relying on to help us perceive these coexisting timelines as well. And not
correct.
Just that, it's anything to do with being able to use your psi abilities or your abilities to perceive outside of what we consider third dimensional constructs or reality.
Correct.
I'd like to talk to you about that in a little while, but before we go there, tell me about some of the most common experiences people would have with timeline anomalies. You mentioned deja vus.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned where it seems like you are entering a whole different zone to an area that you'd been into before because it looks completely different, even though you've traveled down that road a million times before. What are
right.
some of the other more common ones?
Right. Well, for myself, the awareness of timeline anomalies began very small. As a matter of fact, most people's experience with timeline anomalies will be small, incidental, but in and of themselves extremely important. For myself, one of the very first ones that I noticed had to do with my garbage disposal over my sink. It worked with a switch, and when you switched it on, the disposal went on, and when you switched it down, it went off. And then one day, this completely reversed. When you switched it down, it went on, and when you switched it up, it went off. Now, that's not physically possible unless someone had gone in there and changed the plate, changed the wires. But that didn't happen. So I began to think about it. And then on another day, I woke up, and my bedroom bureau, which normally has these brass handles with a brass backing, one day I woke up and that brass backing was gray plastic.
That's something you definitely noticed.
I mean, you know, you notice it and you scratch your head and you go, what? And, you know, and you rack your brain. You say, oh, come on, you know, obviously it was always gray plastic. It had to be because your brain is not going to accept that any other thing could have happened. Is it possible that this whole thing had a brass backing and suddenly it's turned gray plastic? Are these things possible? Well, I began to collect these type of anomalies through my life, starting when I was a child. And I began to think about them, and I would not let them go. And I also noticed how the mind would create this coping thing where you would begin to make excuses that somehow you didn't think about it right, you misremembered something, lots of excuses, except for the one thing we needed to do, not make excuses for it. accept that it's happening, and find out why. And that's what I did, Liz. So people can walk into their closet. They can have their number one favorite shirt has always been blue. And suddenly, it's pink. Now, that didn't happen in the wash. What happened? How did their favorite shirt turn from blue to pink?
Well, it sounds like they switched timelines.
That is a dual timeline memory conflict. That's a timeline anomaly. And generally, it means that a time shift has occurred. These are the symptoms, the glitches, that the human brain retains these leftover memories from other coexisting timelines. I don't think we're supposed to remember these things, but we do.
So if you put it that way, that means that there are multiple versions of us, possibly infinite versions of ourselves, that are possibly existing, well, are hopefully existing, on all of these other coexisting timelines. Is that correct? Or because of the infinite number of coexisting timelines that could possibly exist, does that mean that there would be maybe, you know, a percentage of those timelines where we don't exist on those timelines at all?
That's right.
Yeah?
Here's how, this is the simplest way that I can describe it. Most everybody, in fact, probably all of your listeners work with computers. Okay? So we all know that we have a hard drive, and we know that the hard drive stores the software and the programs and the memory. Okay?
Right.
Now, let's say that you're going to open up a Word program to write a letter, okay? And you write the letter, and then you save it because you intend to come back and continue it. And when you open up the letter again, you make some revisions. Now, you keep the original letter, but you save a copy. So now you have two copies of the letter, but they're different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, in our real world, we have something called the core matrix. I used to call it the matrix, but when the Matrix movie came out, I decided that I needed to add a word to make a differentiation between it, because the movie, the Matrix, doesn't quite get my research properly. It's close, but not correct. So the core matrix is, in effect, the hard drive to all of these coexisting timelines. And every time we have a coexisting timeline, it is saved to the core matrix. Now, most of the time, these coexisting timelines will be streaming, will be running, okay?
Yes.
So how many copies of the letter are you going to work on before you get it just right? How many coexisting timelines are going to be edited until they're just right? So how many coexisting timelines are there? I don't know. I just know that each and every one of them are saved to the hard drive. Okay?
Okay.
Now, how many of us are in them? As long as we are alive in a timeline, we're in that timeline. And a piece of our soul is crossing into that timeline. We are multidimensional souls. We are multidimensional creatures. But we don't always have a multidimensional awareness. But when you have a timeline anomaly experience, when you understand about the core matrix and time shifts, suddenly that awareness level opens up, the light switch goes on, and you will never, ever, ever, ever not know about the greater world that we really live in, the multiple world that we live in.
You know, there are a lot of people in this world who have a remembrance that at some point, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, Nelson Mandela died. And he isn't dead. He's quite alive and well. I'm one of those people who at one point, I can't exactly pinpoint the date, but it was quite a long time ago, heard his name in the news and literally sat bolt upright in my chair and went, hang on a minute, he's dead, isn't he? And that is an example, isn't it, of a dual timeline experience.
Right. I have, this is a phenomenon which is a symptom that a time shift has occurred. I coined the phrase time shift living dead. Now, the phenomenon of experiencing that someone has died, and then all of a sudden they're alive again, or they're dead, they're alive, they're dead, they're alive. I have quite a list of people that this has occurred to. This is a natural phenomenon associated with time shifts. And again, it's a glitch, a little window that's opened up where a part of your brain has actually retained the memory of Nelson Mandela dying. And now in this dominant timeline where your consciousness is dominant, you are also remembering that he's alive and that he died. That is a time shift living dead. That is a dual timeline conflict, and it's a timeline anomaly.
Okay, so tell me how that works then with what you were describing before, where the time shift living dead person, in this case,
right,
Nelson Mandela, what has happened exactly to that person's soul in terms of these two different timelines?
Okay, a person's soul can never be destroyed. It is the ultimate energy that connects everything. But because we have all of these coexisting timelines where we have, I'm going to call them virtual reality worlds, for lack of a better term, and we are bioforms, biolives, within these virtual reality worlds that are actually coexisting timelines. And the most real thing that are in all of these coexisting timelines are our soul. Our soul is our true selves. And our souls can coexist in all of these coexisting timelines. The soul always retains the memory. But the soul there's a big disconnect between the soul and the brain and the body. That's the struggle that we have as biohumans within these coexisting timelines. Now, going back to Nelson, there was a timeline, probably more than one, where the natural course of events occurred, and in the natural course of events, he died. Now, there was a time shift, which means that our entire timeline was taken offline, revised, put back online, the light switch goes back on, and our brains, which are the interface to the core matrix, there's a program that's supposed to work that only allows us to be aware, consciously aware, of whatever dominant coexisting timeline we are in. Okay?
Right.
But that program and that interface, it doesn't work perfectly. Or maybe it's an intentional glitch so that we would learn one day about this greater self, this greater part of ourselves. So in one of the revisions of our timeline, events were changed, and the changing of those events caused Nelson Mandela to still be alive. It's that simple. The revision was not about someone being alive or dead. It's just like moving a grain of sand on a beach, and somewhere halfway around the world, a building has been built. You know, it's just a domino effect.
Right.
And these time shifts are about the altering of events, large events. And these events begin the domino effect, and that's what changes the course of history.
Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about then is, you know, when we talk about glitches in time and being able to, I guess, traverse your way from one timeline to another, which I believe is something that you're training yourself or have trained yourself how to do.
Working on it.
You're working on it.
a work in progress.
Yeah. We're talking then about control. And, you know, if the glitch is there for us and was maybe placed there by a higher part of ourselves so that we could learn more about who we really are, who is controlling this experience, and is there a way that you think you can control it?
That really is the ultimate question for me. One thing that I know for sure is that whoever is what I call the time shift game masters, whoever can affect a time shift, they must remain outside of these coexisting timelines, or they themselves would become a part of the program, which puts the brain through an assimilation program that creates a veil of amnesia over these coexisting timelines. So whoever they are, they have the ability to remain outside of the work.
That's interesting, very, very interesting. I love that theory, and I agree with you. I agree with you, except on one point.
Okay.
I think we're the game masters, and we're the ones who put that glitch in there so that we can rise up out of this program having completely immersed ourselves in it.
Well, I think you're half right. Now, any time that I think about these things, Liz, I'm always willing to be corrected somewhere down the line. But I'll tell you what I think at this moment, okay? I think that the glitch is there, exactly as you say, because we need it to be there so that we can open up the door, open up the window, and see the truth so that we can gain the power, we can gain the control, we can gain our own origins, who we are, where we come from, how it all works, and stop the process of what I consider the hijacking of our souls, the hijacking of our brains, the hijacking of our timelines, possibly for purposes which we have not given permission to.
Yes. Oh, okay? Actually, I agree with all of that.
Okay. Now, so far, in my discoveries and research on time shifts, I have yet to be able to find any way, shape, or form that a single human or a whole group of human beings, no matter how hard they try, they cannot create an actual time shift. Not a time shift. But, what I have discovered is that human beings can control and create something called a reality shift, or the shifting of realities within the timeline. In other words, this shifting of realities or reality shift can alter the timeline without creating an actual other timeline.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that you're able to and can probably teach other people how to edit the timeline that they're on right now.
That's right.
So that it is something that they are much happier with.
Well, you know, because of how I see the world, from perhaps a somewhat unique point of view, I made a choice a long time ago that when I studied and developed the actual science of reality shift manifestation, that it was not going to be about helping individual people have individual better lives. Although, of course, I want people to live happy lives. I want them to be able to utilize what I teach to do that. But I prefer to teach people how to do reality fest manifestation to help heal themselves, heal others, heal the planet. I prefer to use reality shift manifestations to help animals and people and knowledge on a grander level than just the individual. So when someone is doing a reality fest manifestation, I want them to take it beyond themselves. I want it to be service to others instead of just service to self.
Why is that so important, Starfire?
This is just, you know, this is just the way I am. I look around the world and I see people falling through the cracks. I see injustice everywhere. I see the entire planet dumbed down. And I see the masses being controlled by so many things, by politics, by religion, by false beliefs, by not even caring about what's happening to your neighbors and to your friends. There are borders with countries, borders everywhere, prejudice everywhere. I'd like to see that go away. And I think that the way that we do that is we find a way to utilize reality fest manifestation to bring this about. And one of those reality fest manifestations is something that I created called the Vortex Peace Prayer, which is a reality fest manifestation protocol.
Okay, I really want to get into the peace prayer, but we need to take a quick break. We're talking to Starfire Tor. She runs the Interdimension list on Yahoo Groups or at yahoogroups.com, and she has a website which is at starfiretor.com, and that is StarfireTor. We're going to get into reality shift manifestations and all about how to switch on our multidimensional anatomy so that you out there can begin to edit some timelines in a responsible and healthy way as well. That's coming up on Otherwhere when we return.
You're listening to an interview with Starfire Tor, and we're talking time shifts and coexisting timelines. When we come back, we're going to get into some more of Starfire's theories and research into the core matrix and a whole lot more. Well, let's take a break and have a listen to a release on King Street Records, who are not only the most respected and longest-running house music label in the world, but are also kind supporters of Otherwhere, and they give us some wonderful music to play on the show. This is one of my favourite releases on King Street ever, and my copy has been played hundreds of times. And the track has recently undergone a makeover with some new mixes by Frankie Feliciano and Masters at Work, who did the original mixes, and I've played a couple of them on the show, but I think they pale in comparison with the original mixes that came out in the year 2000. So here it is, the original Masters at Work club mix of Rain's Give It Up.
Yeah. Hello, this is Fred Burks of the webofloveinfo.org and wantto-know.info websites. And when I want to feel and connect with the web of love that interconnects us all, I tune in to Liz Miller on Otherware at BBS Radio.
Downloading Otherware.
You're listening to Otherware, and this is bbsradio.com. My name is Liz Miller. My guest this week is Starfire Tor. We're talking about timeline anomalies, the core matrix, and out-of-body experiences, amongst much, much more. We're currently on the subject of reality shift manifestations, and Starfire, let's continue that thought and explain to people how exactly they can create a reality shift manifestation.
Right. Well, I first began to develop reality shift manifestation protocols by studying time shifts, the core matrix, and how reality shifts naturally work in everyday life, because reality shifts do come naturally to people. They do it all the time, every day. Most of the time, they don't realize it. But I needed to understand the mechanism. I needed to understand it, and I needed to make sure that I could develop a protocol that if I did it the same protocol every time, I would get the same outcome. And that's what I did. And so I've been teaching on my list reality shift manifestation protocols. Now, the basics are this. As we just discussed, there are many, many, many coexisting timelines. So when you're going to do a reality shift manifestation, you use your brain, the interface of your brain, and you tune into various other coexisting timelines, and you search out for a bite, a bit, a stream, a scene that has the outcome that really exists in some other coexisting timeline. For example, let's say that you wanted to do a healing, and you wanted to help someone heal. Now, if you could find another coexisting timeline where that person did not have the illness, or where the cure for the illness existed, or some better timeline for that person, then you do what's called a copy-paste from that coexisting timeline, just like you would on any document on your computer. You do a copy-paste. You never take from a coexisting timeline. Everything remains there, just a copy. And you copy-paste it. It's through your brain. It's through your bio software of your brain. You copy-paste it into your dominant timeline. It's instantaneous. And that's one of the ways that reality shift manifestation healing works. And we've tried these experiments on my list on a number of occasions, and we've had some excellent results. So,
well, yeah. All I can say is, wow. That is one technique I have never heard of before or come across anywhere else. And there are plenty of techniques.
Well, this is what I want to teach, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you know there are plenty of techniques out there to help you create your own reality, in quotes. And this is another technique that is kind of, you know, trying to achieve the same sort of thing. But copying and pasting from another reality, just like you would from a Word document into another one, I think that is genius.
Well, I've been experimenting it for years, and it works, very, very well. I'm able to teach it to others, and they're able to make it work.
So tell me how this all happened. Like, how did you work out that that was going to be the method, the copying and pasting? And really, we need to probably break it down even more and just explain what the process is exactly. Are you sitting in a meditation while you're doing this?
No, not really.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, Liz, this started out when I was a child. And I noticed that I was what I would call a natural manifester. I'd be thinking about something, and suddenly, there it was.
So it was
literally
purely by the use of your intent.
Yes, correct. You know? And sometimes it would happen, I'd have something manifested and sometimes nothing would happen, or at least nothing that I would notice.
Give me a quick example from your childhood.
Okay. Let's say I'd be in my room playing with my dolls, and I'd be thinking, I wish I had another doll for this doll to have a friend. And then there'd be a knock on the door, and my mother would say, oh, your aunt just came by and dropped you off this doll. And I'd go, oh. And then eventually it would be, it wasn't just that people were handing me things or that things would be delivered to me, but they would actually appear like a poltergeist or an apport. Items would just literally appear.
So literally materialize in front of your
literally
eyes.
Literally materialize in front of my eyes. And then I think of myself as a living laboratory. I began to study this and try to figure it out. I read everything I could about anything anybody ever wrote or said on poltergeists and apports and manifestations and this and that. I studied ghosts and hauntings and you name it. I looked at it, and none of it satisfied me. None of it could explain what I was experiencing. So eventually I stumbled upon time shifts and the core matrix. And once I realized what time shifts were, what the core matrix was, I realized that, oh, my God, I must have stumbled upon some sort of unified field theory of psi. And if I have, it's going to explain all psychic phenomenon. It's going to explain the soul. It's going to explain ghosts. It's going to explain reincarnation. It's going to explain healing. It's going to explain angels. It's going to explain just about everything, if I'm right. So I began to, like any other scientist, create methods and equations. I brought in friends, tested them out over the years on scores of people. And also during this time, I discovered that there were certain places that I could go that I thought amplified my own natural manifestation abilities. I eventually realized that I had discovered what I call vortexes.
Yeah, and I guess you could also describe that as parts of the Earth's magnetic or electromagnetic grid, where the energy
Absolutely.
Has accumulated.
Right, right. And one of the ways that I found these actual vortexes where I would follow earthquake lines of energy. And I would find that if I followed certain earthquake lines of energy, I would find vortexes along the way. So this was an amazing thing. So, you know, I work in vortexes today that I found literally by following earthquakes.
Mm.
Earthquake faults, earthquake
lines. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe physically what a vortex is like?
I go into these vortexes and I bring people with me all the time, particularly when I want to do very special work that is helping people. It is like you are in an amplifier. Not only an amplifier, but when I'm in the vortex, I have what I feel is an uncluttered connection to coexisting timelines and the core matrix.
Wow, this is great. I've got something to tell you in just a minute, but please keep going.
I do what I call psi data download. It's just like you're on the internet and you see a program and you want to download it to your hard drive. Well, I'm the vortex. I'm the hard drive. I do the downloads, and I call them psi data downloads, and I pick up reams and reams and reams of information from different dimensions, different levels, different places, different timelines, the core matrix, everywhere. So depending on the problem that I'm trying to solve or what I'm trying to achieve, I pick up the psi data downloads. And when it's really important and I really have to do something very large, I go into these vortexes, and a lot of times I bring certain people with me to have the experience. And boy, do they have experiences.
Well, we're going to find out all about those in just a sec. I wanted to ask you, just to clarify again, when you're getting to a vortex point, you know it's a vortex point from the energy in that area, don't you?
I can personally feel it. It's like electrical energy buzzing through my body.
Okay.
I feel like I'm floating, drifting, high, happy, joyous. It's wonderful.
And when you're approaching the area, can you see anything different about it, or does it look completely normal and stable? It just feels different.
It looks like any other normal piece of location, except if there's been a time shift, things can change.
Right. So,
and I record those changes.
Okay, so a quick example would be you go there one day, you see a yellow door at the front, you go there the next time and there's a red door.
Well, actually, that could be paint. What I look for, what I do have a criteria list. What I look for are structural changes. For example, my associate, Brandon Scott, and I went into a part of the vortex, which is in a place called Topanga Canyon, which is sort of a hot spot for UFOs, okay? And we went into this very, very large structure that I've been studying for years, and the actual structure changed. We're talking about two football fields worth of the entire roofing of this place was raised up 2 to 3 stories, and it's now got glass pyramids over it and a huge Eye of Horus in the center with a pool of water. It's stunning. Just stunning, Liz.
Wow,
and that's what I'm
amazing.
Talking about.
Mm-hmm. And what was it before?
It was a building with the same function, but the roof was 2 to 3 stories lower and different. These are structural changes, Liz, that can't take place in a week.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's when I know something important has happened.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Well, what I found fascinating about your description of the vortexes just then is that I was just this week reading a newsletter from a galactic emissary that I know. Her name is Lisa Renee, and she lives in California. And she works with some 12th dimensional beings called the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they do with her is one of the things that she does with them, I should say, she's able to download vast amounts of information via a sort of like comlink that she's got with them. And one of the things that she was communicating in this most recent newsletter is that the 3D Earth is going through the beginning phases of an expedited process of what the Guardians called particle conversion that will further catalyze humanity's progress into one of the increasing polarity spirals. And as you know, our world is becoming more and more polarized, it seems, by the week. And in our own personal lives, we are all being faced with choices that we're being forced to actually make. And those choices, I believe, boil down to two different things. Whether you choose to stay in a third dimensional consciousness and reality, or you become multi-dimensional. And I think that is really the key to the secret of the Mayan calendar, and because at this time in our evolution we are at a juncture where we are actually maybe going to be able to move onto a path beyond time itself, beyond mechanized time, into a state of being where there is no linear time like we experience in 3D. I've never thought of time as a straight line where the past is behind us. We're standing on a point in the middle and the future is way up ahead of us on that very straight line. I've always intuited that time is something that is intrinsically connected to our minds, and that there can't be a straight line.
Time is not a straight line.
No. And so what's happening, in my opinion, is that as we are being faced with these choices, as we are making these choices, we are basically opening ourselves up or closing ourselves off to multidimensionality. And that's really the reason why I do this show, because there are people out there, and myself included in this, who are in this process and who want to gain some control and mastery over it, understand it a little more deeply. And I know this is really a long-winded way of getting to my point, but I wanted to just express that you know, that there does seem to be this polarization going on and people being forced into making these choices. And as a result of this, the Earth is in the interesting fulcrums, you could say, of these two spirals of evolution. And there's a new delineation of the space and time that's occurring between the third dimensional grids of consciousness, which mm-hmm. you alluded to are part of the vortex experience that you have, and the multidimensional grids. So what I'm thinking is maybe you're picking up on that same kind of delineation that's going on between space and time, that you're becoming much, much more aware of these multidimensional grids, and the reason why you feel so ecstatic, so high, you know, and shifted into a different plane when you're in these vortexes is because you are actually accessing that new multidimensional reality that is there for us to access and is kind of becoming anchored into this third dimensional grid of consciousness that we've been used to. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. I'm going to sort of express it in my own sort of simple terms.
Thank you.
I'm obviously a very complex thinker, but I'm really a very simple person, and I tend to see things. I sort of like go right to the bottom line, and I see things with a clarity that sometimes disposes of the steps in between, because I see the steps in between are unnecessary.
Yeah.
So I do strongly believe that we are at a time where human beings are being offered to take a step to take back their power. Absolutely, if they're aware of time shifts and the coexisting timelines and the core matrix, this is my language, of course, then their brain has just opened up, and never again will it be shut down. Once you open it, it never shuts down. Now, I've noticed for the many, many, many years that I've been on my ID list and that I've taught people about my research and discoveries and that my group has actually participated in the research and inside missions, one thing I notice is once somebody actually experiences a time shift, or is absolutely aware of it, and their brain knows, okay, that happened. It's not because somebody told me that it exists. I now know from my own experience that it happened. Once a person has this, they are forever an aware brain. And that means that the awareness of the brain also allows a better link between the soul and the brain communicating. And it's only through this merging, this good communication through the soul and the brain, is everything really going to be empowered through the human experience. We're not really supposed to ascend. We're really supposed to get control of and understand who we are, maybe close down some of the timelines and retire them, maybe utilize them to find the best one. Think about it, Liz. If we have the ability to bring about a world which can have genuine understanding, enlightenment, peace, yet we can still be strong and smart and aware, what is left for us to do?
Play?
Who are we then? What?
Play.
Play. Well, no, that's when we go to the next level.
Right.
You know, we really have to, you're talking about anchoring. This is the anchor, Liz.
Mm.
The knowledge, the awareness, taking responsibility for it, stop allowing the world to live in illusion, to believe fabricated whatever, to really know that people have an actual straight access to the truth. That's what I'd like to. If I can give a gift, that's my gift. And by opening up the brain to the existence of time shifts and coexisting timelines and the ability to reality shift manifest, if I can give that gift and turn on that switch and help people to anchor, to me, it all gets better from that point.
Sounds very, very good, and it sounds like a plan. And I know that this is a plan that you're actually working on right now, retiring some
implemented.
Of the timelines. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know which timelines you'd like to retire.
Well, I say that, you know, sort of as a writer, I'm saying I'd like to retire that script. But actually, what, you know, we are people, and let's please all understand that we came into this world without a complete blueprint of who we are. Our genetics are not complete. We have no innate memories of where we come from. Anybody and anyone can create a false reality for us of how we came to be on the planet. And none of this is real. We need to have at our disposal the truth, because we can handle the truth, okay? That's also a gift that I would like to give. And it's not for me to determine what that truth is. I just want to make it available.
Well, the question I would have is there one truth, or are there multiple truths?
There is going to be one quantum truth. And from that truth, you're going to still have all these coexisting timelines with all of these various events going on. But, you know, once you really understand how it all works, how it all functions, where we really came from, what our true relationship is with ourselves, the cosmos, the multi-dimensions, then we begin to rein it in. We begin to make the rules. We begin to, that's the first day for the beginning of all of us, where we begin to write our own program. And so far, we have not had that ability except in very small doses, very small doses.
We're speaking with Starfire Tor. You can find her on the internet at starfiretor.com or the Interdimension List at Yahoo Groups. And we're on bbsradio.com. When we return, we're going to find out about time shifts from history, if there are any that we know have been documented. Our multidimensional anatomy is going to get a workover. And we're going to find out about who the timeline controllers may be. That's all when Otherware returns.
San Francisco production duo Is and Diz, a release on Classic Records, again from 2000, and that is going out to all the listeners in San Francisco who are listening right now, including Is, if you're out there, who I reconnected with again after a few years through MySpace.com. And man, it seems like everyone is on there. If you are, you can be my friend on MySpace by following the link from the Otherwhere show page at bbsradio.com, or simply go to myspace.com/LizMusic, and that's LizMusic, or if you're in America, LizMusic. Okay?
Hi there, this is Duncan Rhodes from Nexus Magazine, and when I'm listening to internet radio these days, I also choose to listen to Otherwhere with Liz Miller.
You're listening to Otherwhere on bbsradio.com. My name is Liz Miller, and my guest this week is Starfire Tor. Starfire, why do you think reality is set up this way, where there are these coexisting timelines, and if you are able to perceive that reality, that you can then manipulate those timelines?
I can't really say I know the exact answer. I have some theories. And one of those theories is that at some point there will be an original world, an original timeline, an original cosmos. And for some reason, in some way, someone attempted to alter it, possibly even time travelers, in just going through the effect of moving through time, space, dimensions, frequencies. They created a split or a copy. And it may just have self-perpetuated from that moment. That's the easy way out, Liz. Beyond that, we get into a deeper, almost conspiratorial view, where someone has been trying to take control of the various dimensions, worlds, vortexes, planets, cosmos, and there's been what I call a time wars, where various factions have the ability to alter events and timelines, which then cause a time shift, and they alter events in order to give themselves some sort of advantage or power, probably something that we don't even recognize as power, you know, something way above and beyond us. And then another faction says, oh, I'm going to fix that, and then they create their own fix, and that's another time shift, and more coexisting timelines get created, and then infinitum, infinitum, how many do you have? So it appears to me that we are engaged in a time wars, and I can't really tell you whether any of the factions are the good guys or the bad guys. You know, sometimes the best intentions can go terribly wrong. I don't know the answer. All I can do is I can take a look at a time shift, the few that I'm able to actually say, aha, caught you, gotcha. I mean, hey, Liz, if a building suddenly appears in a parking lot where there wasn't one 20 minutes ago, I pretty well know a time shift has taken place. You know, so, you know, I'm trying to say, what's happened in the world? Do I recognize anything else? I put out a call onto my list. I said, hey, everybody, you, all of you around the world, because my list is composed of people globally, just like we're talking globally. And I try to find out, can we even understand what event has changed? What happened to the world? Now, I'm going to tell you something very frightening, okay?
Okay.
And this is only something that I have recently revealed, even to my own list, you know, which is a private list. And this is about 9/11, the terrorist attacks on the United States. We were talking about precogs before, and I do have a lot of precognitions of future events, and these are documented. You can read them on my website. And one of the ones that I had was on September the 10th, 2001. It turned out to be about 9/11.
Actually, I remember reading the report. This was much later, but I do remember reading that report that you wrote just a few days before.
Yeah, yeah. And I
This September the 10th email that I wrote is actually many months in the making, going into the vortex, picking up psi data download, having connections to the ancient times of the Middle East. I was trying to put together this puzzle, and I was feeling terrible anxiety, death, doom, destruction. I was thrown into this terrible depression. I was going back and back and back into various portions of the vortex by myself, with friends, trying to figure out what this was. And by the time September 10th came around, I was convinced that there was some sort of attack or doom that was going to hit the financial sector. And I actually called my stockbroker and I ordered him to sell my stocks. This was a huge argument between us. And he told me that I was basically destroying every investment I ever had. Of course, intellectually, I knew I was. But my side data download told me that if I didn't do this, I would be losing everything. And so I sold all my investments on that day. And, of course, the next day, of course, what happened with the stock market and finances. So I actually, on September the 10th, it looked like I had destroyed myself financially. By September the 11th, it looked like I had saved my finances, okay?
Right.
But what I also wrote was I asked if planes were allowed to fly over New York City skyscrapers. I mentioned the Twin Towers. I mentioned the previous terrorist attack at the Twin Towers. I mentioned attack on finance. I mentioned attack on the military and other buildings, and I was throwing everything but the kitchen sink that I was pulling down from side data download.
Mm-hmm.
And what I also mentioned in this, Liz, is I said, oh my God, if I can pull this down from side data download, think of where am I getting the information from? Is it real time information? Who else knows this? Is this really only a future precog? Or am I really picking up side data download as it is existing? And I believe now that I can look back all of these years that I was actually picking up current side data download. So I was picking up about this world altering 9/11. Not just terrorist attacks, it changed the world. But there's something else that happened at that time, Liz. A memory. You know how we talked about timeline anomalies, and we talked about dual timeline conflicts?
Yes.
Well, I suffer them too. You know, I have to learn to be aware of which timeline I'm in and what the dominant consciousness is, because, you see, Liz, I remember a different 9/11. I remember a devastating nuclear holocaust, and I know that I survived it.
Wow. So where does that remembrance come from?
Actually living through it in a coexisting timeline.
Then the switch then of moving over to this timeline, how did that occur so that this one became the dominant timeline?
Well, this is what I'm trying to figure out. You see, I have, not only do I have this, I mean, my memory of this, Liz, is as real as the memory that you all have of the attacks on 9/11 with the four planes, the whole thing.
Well, that whole event was, I think, burned into all of our memories.
Right.
I
have the same memory burned in, but it was nuclear devastation, nuclear holocaust. It was different than what we experienced in this dominant timeline. So you asked the very question that I did, Liz, which is, what happened? How are we rescued? Because for me, it was like game over, reset game.
Right.
Okay? However, there were survivors. I know. I was one of them. I remember living for years and years and years in that other timeline. I remember that world. And then suddenly, bam, the time shifted into this dominant timeline, and there was no nuclear strikes, multiple strikes. None of that happened. It was, in a way, 9/11 was the lesser. Think about it. 9/11, that we all have burned into our brains, the Twin Towers, the Pentagon, a field in Shanksville, or nuclear devastation that completely altered the entire world. So if, from my point of view, Liz, and, you know, hey, this is a dual timeline memory conflict. I have it. It's in my brain. There's nothing I can do about it except utilize it. So someone, the time shift masters, somebody was able to throw us into a different coexisting timeline where that nuclear devastation never happened. That's the mystery I've been tracking for years.
That is a mystery. and I'm surprised it hasn't sent you kind of crazy, to be honest, because if you've got that much of a memory of the years that followed 9/11, which would take you into this time frame now, because it's now been 5 years, then, you know, it's really obvious that you haven't lived those years before, but you've just lived them now. So it causes all kinds of conundrums.
Let me explain it. There actually are no conundrums, okay? Well, number one, when I finally put this information onto my list, which was, for me, part bravery, you know?
Yeah.
I try to be as straightforward as I possibly can, but I was beginning to feel a great deal of anxiety about a nuclear devastation. And I was feeling it, and I was beginning to reach that point again where I had prior to 9/11.
Right, right.
So I decided to write it on, and lo and behold, members of my list began to say, okay, they had dreams at that time of a nuclear holocaust, or they had dual timeline memories, and all of a sudden, people finally said, okay, now that you've said it, I've had this problem all this time. I woke up one day and went, where did the nuclear devastation go? You see, I've now put this information out to your listeners, and I'm hoping to get a very good response back on whether I've just clicked on the memory reel for them. Do they remember two different 9/11s? Okay?
That'll be really
now,
interesting.
Now, it's not a conundrum because we have coexisting timelines. They all exist. They coexist all at the same timeline.
Okay.
So I'm still in that. I'm still in that. That nuclear timeline still exists.
I see. I see.
It's just no longer dominant.
Right.
But it's still there. It is still there. Okay?
Yep.
Now, I've lived with this coexisting timeline, dual timeline, memory conflict all of my life. I've learned how to deal with it.
That's
right.
Let's talk a little bit about how this phenomenon has, I guess, followed you around a little bit since you were a little girl, for you to have even become aware of it in the first place. Can you recall any particular moments in your childhood when you were really surprised by something that happened and it involved a timeline anomaly?
Well, I think that the biggest surprise, well, I have a memory, or perhaps it's a soul memory, of before I was born into the body that I'm in now.
Right.
And I remember, as a very small child, I realized when I got born, I went, what happened? This isn't right. You know, and I suddenly found myself in a world very odd. I still look at the world like I'm a stranger in a strange land. This is in no way correct. Nothing here. This is all some sort of a video game.
Yeah.
You know, to me, and I've had to learn how to take it seriously, but this is just not right, Liz. So, I mean, I remember when I was a very, very small girl, perhaps the age of 5, I remember in my bedroom at night, three people. I'm not going to describe what they look like because should I ever find anyone else who had the same experience, I don't want to front load what they actually look like. But
fair
I'm just
going
to say that three people appeared at the foot of my bed. And I leaped up in front of my pillow, and one of them came around to the side of my bed, lifted me up into his arms. I remember putting my arm around his head and sort of touching the side of his head. I do know that we spoke telepathically. And it was very simple. He asked me a question. He said, "Do you want to come with us, or do you like it here?" Liz, I don't know what I was thinking. But I don't know. I just said, "I like it." I don't know what. And so, you know, and he just said, "All right, we'll be back for you." And he put me down, and he actually tucked me in bed. He went back to where the other two guys were standing at the base of my bed. In fact, there was a window there, and there was a moon, and it was shining through. And then they just vanish. Okay, I saw them appear, and I saw them vanish. And I leap out of bed, and I look out the window, and I see what, in my child's mind, I see spacecraft. I see craft up in the sky, and it's at night. I'll also tell you that when these three guys appeared in my room, my feeling was these were old friends returning. I knew them. Tra-la. How lovely to see you. How great to see you. I love seeing you. So why didn't I say, "Take me"? Anyway.
I think perhaps your higher self, who chose to be here on Earth, probably kicked into gear at that particular moment and said, no, she's staying.
I guess there's a smarter part to me I haven't met yet, but yes, I think so.
Well, your recollection of that experience is, it echoes many other people's experiences of interactions with beings who are not from Earth or not of this dimension at the very least. Wow. And would expect, considering the subjects that we've been covering today during our conversation, that this experience happened to you because you're no different to anyone else out there who would consider themselves a star seed or, you know, an awakened soul who is multi-dimensionally aware. And we know, I think most people who listen to this show don't need any convincing whatsoever because they've all had their own personal experiences of this. Mm-hmm. But we know that there is more than this third dimensional reality and that there are many, many other kinds of life out there in the universe or in here, on the inner planes, whichever way you want to look at it, beyond human life and the life that you find here on just this planet. So have you met, you know, or have you had any ongoing connections with entities who are non-human since that time? And what kinds of entities have you met up with, if any, in the vortex points?
In the vortex, I have met people who move through space and time. I think of them as I call them time-traveling tourists. And I'm very cautious about these people, Liz, because I have people tell me many things. Just because somebody can appear and disappear and move around in space and time actually doesn't mean I'm going to necessarily believe the story that they're going to tell me. I'm a little wise in that. When I was a child, even into my teens, I was all gung-ho to believe everything that these entities told me. I even believed when they told me that I was special. I felt special. I thought I was special. It was not the right place for me to be. And then one day, in my teens, I realized, hey, some of the things that I'm being told are not necessarily the truth. And I have to stop being dazzled by their technology, by their so-called wisdom, by a lot of things. And I began my own journey, and I'm very glad that I did.
Yeah, so you learnt very early on how important it was to be discerning.
Very discerning. I am not amused, amazed, or convinced by anyone's technology. If somebody wants to convince me that they are something, they're going to have to pass my criteria. You know, and I have very, very stringent criteria. I don't let people come into my life and tell me. I don't even let people come into my life and name me or call me things or heap rewards upon me. Or no, I won't have any of that. That's just nonsense to me. I'm just Starfire Tour. That's all I am. And I was born with a really good brain. I didn't have to work at it. I swear, people, I did not. I was always born this way. I had the awareness. And I just decided that I was going to use it to help people, animals, and the planet, and any other entities that needed my help who were honest and true. So to answer you completely, Liz, from ever since I was a baby, I have had an ongoing relationship with a number of different people and entities, none of whom control me, all of which have my respect.
Are among these entities, are any of these what you would consider your guides?
No. Oddly, no.
Do you have any kind of a relationship with guides that you know of?
Well, I'm going to sort of use a word called mentor.
Okay.
When I was a child, I absolutely had one wonderful mentor. I would, you know, as I look at him in my mind's eye now, I would not consider him to be currently a human being. He definitely did not look like it. Whether humans ever look like this, either in the future or the past, can't say at this time. But I was absolutely mentored by this person who taught me more common sense. Basically, not only did this person teach me quite a bit about the various multi-dimensions, about my own history, genetics, lots of things, but he also told me the common sense of how not to be full of myself, how not to think that I was more special or better than anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, these were the lessons which I was being taught when I was a child because, wow, there was a whole other group that was telling me how wonderful and great I was and wanted to utilize my gifts and skills to do their bidding. I know it's kind of hip to have lots of spiritual guides and stuff, but I really don't. That's very few, rare, and far between.
So what are the role of these entities that you've had ongoing contact with all these years? What is their role in your life?
There are two things that I know about these people. One of the things I know is that they came into my life when I was a child, based on the way that I came into the world. And number two, I'm now not believing very much of what they told me when I was a child, so I'm trying to figure out just exactly who they are, what they are, why they were, and if they have any part of my life, even if I can't see them. So, is that a little confusing?
Okay. And we touched on it earlier, but I would like to go a little more deeply into this whole idea of the Game Masters, or the Time Lords,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, whatever term you want to give it, there are beings who you believe have some ability to control the coexisting timelines that are broadcast, like frequencies to be tuned into. And there seems to be not just them, but maybe there is actually a hierarchy of beings that are able to access the timelines, but in different ways and with different abilities to control it.
That's right.
So could you just give us your thoughts on all of that?
Sure can. First, it's very possible that some time shifts are a natural phenomenon of the planet, may be connected to electromagnetic energy on the Earth, relating to solar flares and lots of other geophysical things like that. So number one, some time shifts may be natural. Maybe. Okay? On the other hand, these natural phenomena may be utilized by these time shift game masters to actually affect a time shift. So any time that I do know that a time shift or a time shift cluster has occurred, I always know that I want to study what's happening on the planet geomagnetically. And that includes on the sun, and that includes checking out HARP, and the whole kit and caboodle.
Just quickly, how much of a correlation do you find between some of these anomalies and HAARP?
At this time, listen, I know all about the controversies with HAARP. What I'm going to say at this time is that because radio frequencies are utilized in some of the time shift abilities,
right,
that it is conceivable that something like HAARP could be utilized to either track time shifts or create time shifts. That doesn't mean HAARP is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that they have the tools.
Yeah.
The tools are there. Use your imagination. Okay?
Okay.
I do watch HAARP to see when we are having geomagnetic storms. I notice that a lot of time shifts do occur during geomagnetic storms.
Hmm.
Also, some earthquakes, some geophysical aspects that we have on the planet are actually symptoms of a time shift. I mean, after all, we are getting edited. And when you revise and you put it back together and you are talking about frequencies and those frequencies go right through the planet, right through the grid system, it can create earthquakes. It can cause the atomic clock to change. It can cause the poles to shift. It can cause the Earth to wobble. It can cause lots of things that we can see that science really doesn't understand but would be happy enough to put a label to. I believe that HAARP should be looked at to see whether or not the tools for creating a time shift are there.
Right.
And it's not just at HAARP. There are other places on the planet who have these radiosawn tools and gadgets, who have this type of setup. I think it would be foolish to believe that this entire array of radio gadgets was set up there just to study the ionosphere. I think that's putting blinders on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So because my own research independently shows that coexisting timelines have to do with frequencies, and I know that radio wave frequencies are involved, it's difficult for me not to look over at HAARP and wonder, was HAARP created to A, study time shifts, B, create time shifts? Don't know. I do not have a direct answer to that. Okay? I just don't want to weave in my time shift research into other people's conspiracy notions on HAARP.
Understandable.
Some of them may be valid. Right.
Yes.
I just have to be careful. So right now, HAARP is just a huge antenna array studying the ionosphere. But let's not put the blinders on about that.
Okay. So let's get back to the Time Lords or the controllers of these timelines.
Okay. One of the ways that time shifts probably occur is as a result of time travelers moving through coexisting timelines or, in effect, time travel. Okay? What I always tell people about time travel is you really need to expect that at some time in the past, sometime currently, or sometime in the future, time travel has been perfected. Therefore, time travelers are here now. Okay?
Okay.
Another thing that I wish to point out is something called the grandfather paradox. This is that old time travel paradox conundrum where they say, gee, if we go back in time and kill our own parents or grandparents, would we then cease to be?
That's only assuming that there's one timeline only.
Well, exactly. But the thing about time travel is that once you leave your point of origin, you cannot go backwards and forward into the timeline of your point of origin. You automatically move into coexisting timelines. So let's say I wanted to go to yesterday, okay? And I know how to tune in the frequency to yesterday.
Okay.
I'm not tuning into this timeline yesterday. I'm going to find a coexisting timeline, and we just move across. And again, when I say move across, it's not linear. It is not linear. That's just a visual that I'm creating, okay? So you just move, you step across to a coexisting timeline, which is in the a day before mode. So you're not really ever in the timeline that you originated from. Therefore, you can never go back in time and eradicate yourself by eradicating one of your ancestors.
Right.
Cannot happen. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, it's a big topic. It's a big topic.
It's a great subject, though, and I really love talking about that grandfather paradox and how there are many ways you can actually get around it. It's just you've got to expand your thinking, you know, get off this whole one-track mind sort of mentality or one timeline only mentality.
Right.
But I am fascinated with what the implications of moving timelines is, you know, if you were to tune in to the frequency of yesterday, for example, are you able to get back to the frequency of today once you've gone there?
No.
No. So you're never able to re-enter the same timeline or the original timeline that you perceived yourself on.
Unless you have some way to remain outside of the energy of the frequencies.
Right.
And that in itself is an enigma, because you and I, as we're talking about this, we're inside the enigma.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't know. We can think about it, and I think about it. But right now, you know, time travelers, just by the effort of moving from coexisting timeline to coexisting timeline in an effort to move to the past, to the future, or whatever they're doing, that can affect a time shift. The very act of their moving through these coexisting timelines can constitute the changing of an event in that coexisting timeline, which can trigger the editing of the coexisting timeline, which in turn triggers the time shift.
Okay.
So, you know, so a time traveler can be creating all of these coexisting timelines, can be creating all of these time shifts, and that's not really their main goal. Their main goal is just to travel. Yet they're creating all of this wake,
this
time shift wake.
Yeah.
So one time shift is going to be natural. The second time shift can be time travelers who are creating this time shift wake. And then we have three and four. Three is going to be from the very beginnings of who we are. Perhaps they're ETs, perhaps they're us, perhaps there's some form of us, or perhaps a merging of us and who begot us. But there is a part of the human brain and the soul and the body and the grid patterns and the energy of the planet and the energy of the coexisting timelines, that if you know just how to do it, if you're just attuned to it properly, people can create altered timelines and manifestation. This goes back to the old days of sorcery, you know.
Yeah.
This is probably, you know, the whole thing about sorcery and wizards is they could control manifestation. They could morph one thing to another. They could move forward and backward in time. They could do all of these things. Liz, this legend comes from somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And you know what? It resonates with us so much because we all know on a deep level it's true.
Right. And even though at this time in my life and for all of these years I've been teaching that people, just people in general, just because they want to get together and go, hey, let's make a time shift, they cannot. There is a programming that stops that from happening. However, Liz, I myself have sort of stepped from just being able to do reality shift manifestations, and I am actually taking that intellectual step to see, is it possible for me to be that time traveler or be that time shifter who can actually create the editing in the timeline. My brain has begun to think in these terms. I still swear by my original research that this can't be done, but suddenly something in me says, maybe I can. Maybe I can find a group of people. Maybe we can. Don't know, Liz. But my brain goes there. Okay? So part of the time shift game masters are going to be these ancient forces. I use the word occult. That's inadequate completely. But these were people who had almost complete control of all things within the timeline. Okay?
Right.
And these people, they're still with us. They don't live in the same exact dimension as we do. They do live in the altered dimensional world. They can, just to put it bluntly, they can have their own little fortress of solitude in the middle of New York City, and you won't see it.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
And the fourth time shift masters, I believe, are extraterrestrial. I believe that these are the meddlers. These are the biggest meddlers that we have.
And why do you think they've been doing the meddling in the first place? Have you got any thoughts on that?
I do. This is just my philosophy of it. It's my take on it. I have no hard evidence that I can trot out, you know, to the scientist and say, well, here's my proof that the ETs did it. No. It's intellectual. I have viewed their relationship with the planet. I think it's a bungled job all the way through. Everything with the with those abductions that are real and they're being able to move through dimensions. You know, when you just look at the way real ET craft can move, they blink in, they blink out. That's moving through dimensions. Okay, that means that they have a particular technology. But I also see what's not happening on the planet. I look back in history and I see some sort of interference and involvement. Possibly these are attempts to help us. Perhaps these are attempts to enslave us. I think that's a point of view. But I look at the ETs as bunglers. I'm sorry, but I do. Okay? And I think that there has been an attempt to gain some sort of ground control, some sort of power, some control, some sort of an experiment, the changing of events, the changing of a lot of things, and none of it's very good.
Mm.
So because none of it's ever been very good.
When you speak of ETs, that's a very large kind of, that's a word that can bring in a lot of different races of ETs, a lot of different influences on this planet. Are you referring to one particular or a main collection of ETs, or are you just lumping them all in the same basket?
I'm not going to lump them. I'm actually going to give them an origin. I am going to pinpoint the ETs that were involved with the original scientific experiments on the planet that begot human beings. I'm talking about those who came here to terraform and to bioform. On this planet, these are the ETs that are talked about in the Sumerian clay tablets, that the Hopis talk about. It's, you know, it's in every creation legend practically, those ETs.
Right. Okay.
These, you know, where, you know, they're nowhere to be found today. They created all of this. They set evolution on a crazy course. There's no blueprint, no owner's manual. And you have all of these human beings who don't even have a clear memory of their own origins. I call that bumbling.
I do.
Sorry,
too.
But I do. Okay? And, you know, and I think that if these people are still around somewhere, they have an obligation. However, I also think that the same mentality that went into terraforming and bioforming, that same loss of morals and ethics, these are not really the people that we can call on to help us. So we need ourselves to raise up our intelligence, raise up our knowledge. We need to meet the challenge, and we need to free ourselves and not be dependent on ET this or spirit guide that. Or, you know, yes, if you find really good ones and honest ones, use them as friends and allies, but not leaders and not determiners. And certainly, anybody who does anything to hijack our souls, our brains, our worlds, our timelines, say no. Just say no.
Well, I tell you what, there seems to be a lot of hijacking of our minds, our brains, and our souls going on right now. It hurts, you know, to look out there and see what's going on and to feel the effects of that in our own individual lives. And it can manifest in so many different ways, you know, from someone being less caring than you would hope that they would be to to our governments, you know, like overtly participating in mind control and propaganda.
Yes. Right. I mean, you know, just your everyday advertising on the radio, on television, in print, that's a form of mind control.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know. And we have to stop allowing our perceptions to be hijacked. But let's be honest. We really need to replace the ignorance with intelligence. And that intelligence, now this is my opinion, Liz, but I think that we are best served if we can switch on our own brains and souls and have the memories come to us independently. In other words, be in direct with whatever. And not being handed to it like, well, here's a booklet of your, of who you are, and this is how you work, and this is where you came from. That's all well and good. But I think that we need to generate our own DNA, our own dynamics. We need to evolve so that we can be our own people.
That's exactly why you're on the show today, because in our next segment we're going to get into our multidimensional anatomy, what you think is actually operating within your own body system or systems that is allowing you this access to being able to get a bigger picture, to lift yourself up out of 3D, basically, and see what really is going on. So that's all when we return. This is Otherwhere. I'm Liz Miller, and our guest this week is Starfire Tor.
And when we return will be next week, when you hear part two of our interview with Starfire Tor. There was just so much information, and as you can hear, it was amazing. So I just wanted to keep it going. And so we're going to have two parts of the interview and a whole lot more information from Starfire about her research, experiences, and development of all of her theories and discoveries regarding time travel, time shifts, and the core matrix. We're out of time, and as usual, I haven't made enough room for the relaxation at the end, and you'll really have to forgive me for that, because I did promise last week we'd have an extra long relaxation this week. But next week, we will definitely, definitely do it. In the meantime, if you'd like to check out Starfire Tor's Body of Light meditation, you can find that right now at the homepage at bbsradio.com or at interdimension at Yahoo Groups. So, farewell for another week. It's been a wonderful journey through time, and I hope that you've enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for being here. Have a wonderful week, and many blessings to all of you.